Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome once more to the Orbit Windows Phone Insight Podcast. Looking at the world of Windows phones, what's been happening in the last week or so? What can we look forward to? Where people went wrong? What are people doing right? What's happening in the industry? And all of that with 30 seconds from me and 30 minutes from Rafe Blandford. Hello, Rafe.
Well, you might have to talk a little bit more this week because I've been away. So I will be catching up on all the Windows Phone stuff and there'll be some more content coming from me, but you can look forward to hearing more of you and dulcet tones in the next half hour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're going to be the next Pope, aren't you?
Maybe not.
Maybe's eyes, maybe's no. All right, okay, let's move on with it. Lots to going on. It's mostly sort of numbers and industry one this week, right? Just to give you a little heads up while you've been away jaunting around the world. Let's start with the Canalys numbers, if you don't mind, because that's an interesting one. Again, there's this constant quest, not just in Windows Phone, but also in Android and Apple's all, to work out how many have been sold, how many are out there. Manufacturers never give hard numbers or anything like that. It's left to people to sort of estimate, to extrapolate from comments. So Canalys have been in the game for a long time. Q4 2011 was 2.78 million devices, and Q4 2012, they've just announced that their reckoning is 5.1 million Windows Phones handset were sold in the quarter running up to Christmas. That's a pretty good number, Rafe, I think. Because, I mean, we talked about this on the site before Christmas, and I said, you know, if we can get to about 5 million, I think they should be happy with that. And according to Canalys, they have.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. This number debate always comes up when you talk about the success of a smartphone platform. You know, how many do you need to sell to be successful? And I think it's probably fair to say Windows Phone has ramped up more slowly than certainly Microsoft and its hardware manufacturers were hoping, but more to the point, probably more slowly than a lot of commentators were expecting. And, you know, if you look at the various analyst projections, you can see that. Yet there isn't sort of this feeling amongst most people that Windows Phone has failed, but there's certainly, I think it's fair to say, a group out there that's already dismissed it. I think that's a little bit short-sighted. I mean, you can look at the growth. I mean, by comparison, I think Canalys projected in Q4 of the previous year, 2.78 million devices. So it's, you know, almost a doubling year on year. Now, I think it just underlines what we've been saying for a while, that 2013 is a really critical year and that there needs to be an uptick in the growth numbers, or more to the point, they probably need to sustain, you know, the kind of growth they've already had. And obviously that's harder when you're, you know, going from 5 to 10 million. It's probably harder than going from 2.5 million to 5 million. We talk about these as estimates. We should probably say that Canalys, you know, actually do a lot of work to produce these numbers. You know, they do various things, including going to look in the supply chain, see what are being sold, you know, talking to distributors and that kind of thing. That's where these estimates come from. But of course, it's never going to be completely accurate. But it's probably fair to say these are certainly within the million or so mark. You know, it's interesting, you compare this to the number that Nokia reported for Q4, which I think was 4.4 million. It just goes to show how dominant Nokia have kind of become in selling, you know, the Windows Phone devices. And that's, you know, previously we talked about them being around the 80% mark. This would suggest they're nearer to the sort of 85% mark, which, you know, must be somewhat worrying for the other manufacturers. But I think it also goes to show, you know, they're going to have a lot of work to do to, A, maintain that, but, you know, the competition from other manufacturers will come in. And I think really the ecosystem as a whole probably needs more devices and more variety from manufacturers. I think HTC will be making up a significant portion of those other sales. But, of course, we now have some of the Chinese manufacturers coming in, you know, the Huawei W1. That hasn't really counted, obviously, for the last quarter. It's only really just gone on sale, and we'll be getting more of those devices as well. So it'll be interesting to see the impact that has on the number. But yes, I think, you know, a lot of people would say 5 million is a good result, but I think we probably do need to put it in the context of, you know, Samsung shipping, you know, 60 million plus Android devices, you know, Apple doing 40 million iPhone devices, and all of those various other numbers. And, you know, by that comparison, you can see that Windows Phone has an awfully long way to go. It's not quite matching BlackBerry, for example, you know, so it's not even in that third position, which you kind of like to be. But it is progress.
It is, yeah. Now, let me take a couple. I've got a couple of short points here, Rafe, okay? And I will come back to you after each one of them, as long as you're snappy. First one is, again, it's the lovely definition between shipping and sold. You remember Steve Ballmer saying a while back that, oh, we were selling four times as many in Q4. We sold five times as many over the Christmas period. Yet the Catalyst numbers come up and show that it's only doubled. Now, okay, there's always going to be a sort of bit of an inflation of your numbers, and the analysts are going to try and be nice as well. But I wonder if the difference here is that analysts have said that they're sort of in shipping figures, and Steve Ballmer says his have been on sold figures. Now, we always thought that there was an oversupply issue in 2011, especially with the Lumia 800. So I wonder, is there a way you think we can reconcile these two times two and times five numbers?
I don't really think it's a difference between shipping and sold devices. People like to get excited by that sort of thing. And I grant you that kind of the stock in the retail channel, which will obviously be the difference between shipping and sold devices sometimes, you know, that does vary, you know, between different quarters. And sometimes there may be, you know, just a few weeks of stock, and sometimes it will be up to 6 or even 8 weeks, and sometimes even longer. But that doesn't actually create that big a difference. And we know from what Nokia said in their conference call, that that didn't really apply to them in the last quarter. And since they're the majority of the shipments, I don't think you can use that as a reason. I suspect the way Steve Ballmer was looking at it was a much shorter time period, and it may have been a couple of weeks when a certain device went on sale. He may have been talking about a certain market. So, for example, I wouldn't be surprised if he picked out the US market figures where, you know, with the 8X getting ranged by quite a few carriers, as well as the 920 on AT&T, that probably would have been better than, you know, what the was managed the last time round. Because if you recall, the previous launch was kind of Windows Phone 7.5 devices, and in the States at least, that was initially largely dependent on HTC devices. And with Nokia on, I think it was T-Mobile, but it wasn't until the Lumia 900 came along that it started getting, you know, a bigger push. So my gut reaction would probably be, you know, Steve Ballmer was being a bit selective in the figures he was choosing. Maybe it was a particular region rather than being global, and, you know, just a short time period, maybe a few weeks rather than the whole quarter. Because obviously, you know, if you look at, you know, a launch period, yes, you're going to get the most sales immediately after the launch. And there was a very slight difference in the window this time round, so it'd be a bit disingenuous to compare, say, week 48 or whatever it was with week 48 the previous year. You'd have to look at the two launch weeks.
So a little exaggeration is Rafe's line on that one. Okay, right then. I think we can just about get that one past the lawyer. If we had a lawyer, we don't, do we?
No, we don't.
No, right. It's all in your head.
Keep an eye on that. So no, that's not entirely true. We do have someone we can consult if necessary.
Yes, and he will say it's Ewan's fault. Blame him. Yes. All right, here's this one here. I love this. It's an interesting idea here, but let's build it up. Rafe, what's at the moment the Android market share, roughly?
Well, it depends how you measure it, but
just give me a number. Short and snappy, Rafe.
65%, 70%.
Thank you. Right then, 70%. Give me an Apple's market share number.
It's about 30%.
Okay, and then you've got everybody else, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, right, put that to the side. Now try this one. What's Nokia's market share in Windows Phone? It's about 70%, isn't it? 70%.
85% by these numbers.
So what HTC's percentage?
Probably around 10%.
Everybody else?
Sort of 5% maybe.
Okay, you ever notice how that curve just gets completely replicated? I mean, if we were to look at Android, I bet if we looked at Galaxies and then the next one's probably going to be the HTC or the Sony's, and then you get the also ones. There's this lovely bang, bang, bang power curve that seems to be seen throughout modern consumer electronics, where you have multiple choices and platforms, ecosystems, hardware. And I just find that intriguing.
Well, I think you can see patterns wherever you choose to. That's the nature of numbers. But have a look at, say, office suites, where Microsoft is near totally dominant. That doesn't follow that pattern. Or car manufacturing, or ebook readers, or feature phones, where there's actually, you know, a clear duopoly between Nokia and Samsung, and probably Nokia have the advantage at the moment. And then there's a lot of smaller players as well. You can maybe read into it that, you know, there's room for three or something at the top, but I think you have to be very careful about making those pattern comparisons. So I'm not sure I really buy that particular, you know, comparison one to the other.
Boo.
Sorry,
that
Ewan.
Nice. I would have liked that. Because then we could have said it's going to be quite hard for Windows Phone to make that jump up into the second to actually get into sort of double figures and such.
It is, no doubt about it. I mean, that's kind of the big challenge for Windows Phone in 2013. It's, you know, how does it go from sort of having, you know, been taken as a credible challenger, which I think it's probably fair to say it now is, you know, you will hear people talking about it, and certainly the people that actually buy and use the phone, you know, it's doing well, it's well rated, you know, Nokia often sort of talk about the feedback they get from consumers. And interestingly, if you talk to some of the operators, Windows Phone has some of the lowest return rates for any of the smartphones.
Even ahead is that of, percentage or units?
No, that's in terms of percentage, you know, because people will often bring back a phone and say, no, I don't like it or can't use it. I don't think it'll surprise anyone to hear for smartphones it's highest for Android and iOS is in the middle. But it does surprise me somewhat that Windows Phone has beaten iOS in that respect. And obviously it depends on the operator you talk to. In this case, it's talking to a couple of Western operators, so it may be different elsewhere. So that's kind of, you know, a positive sign for Windows Phone. But there is this idea of a familiarity principle, and this is the concept that people often stick with what they know or what they're recommended by a friend. And, you know, that's a problem that does face Windows Phone. You know, there's been some talk about, will Windows 8 help solve that? But of course, that's not really very widespread either yet. And I think, you know, for all the times that the Windows label helps with sort of familiarity and recognition, there's also something that goes back the other way. I'm not one of those who thinks that Microsoft should rebrand Windows Phone to something else. I think Windows in the long term does help. But, you know, when you're competing against Samsung, who's pushing out loads and loads of Android devices, and I mean, actually, it's Samsung is the big competition here. If you took Samsung away, it would be a very, you know, different picture. Of course, someone else would be replacing them. I think a more apt comparison in sort of the short term might be with the iPhone. And, you know, it's pretty clear that Apple, you know, the sales are still growing slightly, but relatively speaking, it started flattening. You know, the growth isn't there. And there's a lot of questions about where Apple will find that growth from.
Whereas watches.
Well, watches or yes, you know, and the kind of the rise of the iPad has partly taken, you know, people's attention away from that, I think. I mean, debate about whether you see tablets as cannibalizing smartphone sales is, you know, maybe for another time. But, you know, during that same period, Windows Phone has grown from nothing up to a couple of percent market share, and there's every indication that that will grow again to 5, you know, maybe 10%. And that's going to be the thing to watch this year. And actually, I think that kind of battle between Windows Phone and iOS, you know, will be kind of the narrative of the next couple of years. And you've got some people predicting that Windows Phone will overtake iOS and, or, you know, the current status quo will be maintained. Of course, there's BlackBerry 10 in the equation now. You know, I don't think Android will be going anywhere simply because it's being used by so many, you know, it's well established. But I've said this time and time again, you know, the unexpected thing would be for things to stay exactly as they are. The mobile industry is very dynamic, and if we've learnt anything in the last few years, it's that things can change very quickly, and I would expect that to continue to be true.
Right then, some of the things that are changing. We've already talked quite extensively about how Windows Phone is looking at China, as is Android, as is Apple, as is every other handset. The other battleground looks to be Africa. So Huawei, the W1, which has been rumored for a long time, finally broke cover during this year. It's now going to be one of the leading handsets in Microsoft's For Africa program. And again, it's taking the device into a new territory, you know, almost saying, look, well, we can't fight these strongholds in Western Europe. We can sit there and chip away. But if we want to sort of make a big a grab of stuff, then we got to go somewhere else. And Africa is very interesting because they're missing out the whole sort of laptop revolution. They're going from desktops and then just going straight to their smartphones.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's very easy to talk in general terms about this market, and the same gets said sometimes about India and China. But it is very important to realize that it's not the same as a Western European market, and you can't approach it in the same way. And that's partly about, you know, the way operators work, but it's also, you know, about the attitude of consumers. And it's, you know, you can be very guilty of thinking from a Western-centric viewpoint, and I'm just as guilty of this as anyone else. Africa is not a market I understand well, but there, you know, despite, you know, what many people, you know, perceive Africa as being, you know, the poor continent behind everyone, there's actually still, you know, quite significant numbers of, you know, effectively the middle class or the affluent who, you know, are interested in buying a smartphone and actually may be prepared to spend a significant proportion of their disposable income on it, more so than anyone in the UK or the US, you know, because it's a status symbol, as Ewan's suggesting, their computers as well. I mean, a good example of this is Nigeria, which for a long time was one of the most successful markets for Nokia's N-series devices. That was kind of their high-end Symbian smartphones. And it was status symbol, but there's also, you know, there was a certain level of wealth. I mean, we're not talking about huge numbers, but of course the population of an entire continent is so large, you know, just like the market in China is so big, even if you haven't got the same proportion of people using smartphones, it can still represent a very significant market indeed. Now, it's early days in Africa in some sense for smartphones, but you know, mobile phones have had a much bigger impact on society there. You know, there are, you know, one of the interesting facts that always kind of reminds me to try and think about it in a different way is that mobile phone coverage is more ubiquitous in Africa than the ability to actually plug in a phone, i.e. electricity. And so, you know, you have seen various innovative recharging schemes over the years. Nokia in their feature phones kind of introduced the idea of essentially multiple users of a phone, so had multiple address books, and almost the idea that you could have an identity that you log on to a phone. And that's because people often share a phone within a family, or maybe between a few households for business. So the idea of, you know, specifically targeting, you know, a campaign at Africa, I think is very smart. I think it may actually need to be even more focused than that onto individual countries. We don't know an awful lot about For Africa yet as a campaign. I'm hoping to find out more about it in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress. But clearly it is a potential growth market. And while I think, you know, Android is already becoming established there, you know, you can't treat it the same as other markets. And so there is an opportunity perhaps there for Windows Phone to sort of get in there. And of course there is going to be all sorts of issues around cost of handsets and that kind of thing. So it's interesting to see, you know, Huawei jumping on this, you know, straight away and being one of the partners for this program. You know, I'm having to talk about this in very general terms because I don't know very much about it, but
it is quite sort of nebulous at the moment. It's just like we're sending lots of phones to Africa.
Yes, and you know, I mean, part of the thing is, you know, they're saying it's going to be available in Egypt, Nigeria, Kenya, Ivory Coast, Angola, Morocco, and South Africa. I mean, it's also partly about making sure the Windows Phone marketplace, i.e. for apps, is launched in that country. You've got the right language support. You know, obviously that's very important, being able to use your phone in your own language. And, you know, that's something, it's kind of a push has come, you know, from Nokia on that. You know, it's one of the things that they kind of took into the alliance with Microsoft, the idea that it was more than just the US and Western European markets. And, you know, they pushed Microsoft very hard on expanding localization and kind of the reach of the platform. And you know, the benefits of that have only really just begun to be felt in Windows Phone 8, which kind of doubled the number of markets. And now it's approaching, you know, what's available for Android and Windows Phone. I was expecting it to push, you know, to get pushed even more in the future. But, you know, Africa is something, you know, there are whole conferences on this as kind of the next big market, but we often talk about India and China and Asia as growth markets. But I think Africa will become just as important, and it actually kind of follows the global economic model. You know, not much attention is paid to Africa yet, but it's starting to come into conversations, you know, all the kind of the mineral wealth out there and all sorts of other potential things typical of the economic cycles, and people looking at labour prices and things like that as kind of Asia becomes, you know, more expensive. Is there, you know, potential new markets in Africa? And I guess the mobile industry is following that too. But, you know, don't mistake it for being an unsophisticated market. In some ways, it's, you know, ahead of other markets. For example, you know, mobile money is far more advanced in Africa than it is in almost any other market, certainly more advanced than anywhere in Western Europe. Some of it, you know, operates in a different way. You know, it's often through the exchange of SMS messages rather than something like NFC. But as I say, the services out there can be just as sophisticated and more so.
Now, let's move back to the UK briefly, and then I want to look at some handsets as well, Rick, that we've both had our hands on. First of all, Vodafone finally getting hold of Windows Phone 8 handsets. And again, this talks about the sort of slow adoption, the long run to try and get a place that's taking longer than many expected. Windows Phone 8 launched in October. UK had a very interesting exclusive deal, certainly with Nokia under EE, but now Vodafone are starting to come on stream again. Why is it taking these networks, you know, months to get past? I mean, Vodafone have missed the Christmas season. That's not going to have helped any of the Windows Phone partners here, Rafe.
Well, no, it won't. But obviously, partly this is about the fact that Nokia in the UK had an exclusive arrangement with EE for the 920. The 820 has been a bit more widely available, and there were some Windows Phone handsets sort of available on Vodafone, but they've now kind of started their big push. There's going to be a bit more of an advertising campaign, and that includes the 920 and various other handsets. It's just the way these rollouts work. You know, they don't appear everywhere at the same time. It's sometimes very easy just to think about the leading markets, and this applies to all smartphones. You know, you'll hear every now and then about, for example, the iPhone 5 launching in such and such a country. And obviously the aim of these big manufacturers ideally is to launch in as many networks in as many places at the same time as possible, but that's not always possible. I mean, sometimes it can be a capacity issue with actually building the handsets. There's just not enough available. That certainly probably would be the case for the 920, which Nokia basically can't build as many as they would be able to sell at the moment. And that's continuing into this quarter, actually. You know, they've talked about this kind of the shortages. But also, you just think about building things. You know, when you've got a factory, you can output a certain number a week. And it is possible to kind of surge production capacity for short periods, but there are limits to that. Yet the way that, you know, the phone cycle works is it tends to be, you know, trying to sell lots of handsets early on. And so actually when you're launching a handset, the one that you buy on launch day will often be manufactured several months, if not more, before, you know, in anticipation of kind of building up a certain stock level for that initial sales period. And so it's not surprising to see kind of these other markets come on stream later, because it's, you know, essentially when the production capacity is available. That's one reason. The other reason is just, you know, there isn't necessarily the push to do so, because Vodafone has decided that actually waiting a few months until it's got a complete portfolio, it's not going to make that much difference to its Windows Phone sales. Is that because Windows Phone isn't being taken very seriously? Well, it's partly about that. And, you know, by contrast, of course, everyone will try and launch the iPhone on day one, because, you know, they see that as immediate sellers. So, you know, it probably does reflect Windows Phone's kind of current nature as a second tier platform, frankly. But that said, you know, Vodafone are giving it a pretty big push in the UK. I've seen quite a bit of advertising about, if you know, look in the stores, it's sort of, you know, it's prominent in the Windows displays. It's interesting, it's getting almost a bigger push from the kind of the third party retailers, Carphone Warehouse and Phones for You. And this is really about the continuing message that we keep hearing from Microsoft and Nokia about operators wanting this third ecosystem. Now, I do think it's possible to overplay that statement, but at the same time, based on conversations I've had with operators, it's very fair to say that operators don't want to have to deal with a kind of an Apple-Samsung duopoly, and they see Windows Phone and the Nokia handsets in particular as a very serious bit of competition there. Interestingly, BlackBerry is seen as more specialized, you know, and not so generic. You know, the momentum behind Nokia and Windows Phone, and to be fair, the other manufacturers as well, and we're sort of seeing them come in as kind of second tier partners. But because it's early days, it's maybe less, those are less important. I still think that momentum is there, as kind of operators wanting it, despite, you know, this, what many people perceive as kind of a slow build up.
Let me jump in on that point, because there is an impression online from certain quarters that operators hate Microsoft Windows because it has Skype on it.
Yeah, that's just not really true anymore. I mean, there will be some operators who will say, I don't want it pre-installed. And that may be one of the reasons it kind of wasn't fully built into the platform. Actually, I think that's more to do with the engineering challenges myself. It just wasn't quite ready. And it would be possible in the future to see operator-branded handsets that had it removed. But, you know, Skype is available for a lot of handsets now. It's, you know, available for the iPhone. It's available for Android. So the idea that operators make a decision based on the presence or the availability of an app, you know, and Microsoft, no, it just doesn't apply anymore. And, you know, the operators do realize that, you know, you're moving to a data-centric world. And, you know, yes, you know, you can get excited by such things, but honestly, it's a debate that was gone and dead, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. It really doesn't apply in the market anymore.
I'd say it sounds like you're flogging a dead horse, but I can't be sure if it's a horse, a cow, or a monkey, or a donkey at the moment here in the United Kingdom. So let's just move over and have a look at two handsets. Rafe, you've got a 620 now, haven't you?
I do, yes.
And I've been having a look at the HTC 8S. Let's start with the 8S, because I want to finish on a good note. The 8S, from HTC, sorry, the HTC Windows Phone 8S Windows Phone 8 handset, which I think is the official title.
I think what you're actually looking for is the Windows Phone 8S by HTC.
There we go. Thank you. I knew that that training would come in useful for somebody, but not me. It looks lovely. It takes the same styling as the 8X. It's a 4-inch Super LCD screen at the 800 by 480 resolution that we're all inherently familiar with in the Windows Phone platform. Because of the smaller size, my thumb can reach all the corners of the screen. It's a one-handed device. It feels incredibly light. The styling and the looks. Okay, the review sample that we had supplied by Phones for You, and it's got back in the post there. Now has a little white sort of the little white color spot at the bottom. I'd like it if you could change that completely, not just the back, because under the soft keys you have another bit of color stripe as well. It's a shame that you can't change both of them so you can completely change the color of the phone like an Express on cover. But that sort of physical bit aside, physically it's a wonderful handset, Rafe, but I'm not going to be using it day to day.
Yes, I mean, like you, I really like the design of this. I almost think it's a better design than the 8X, you know, given the context of the pricing and everything else, because this is a relatively cheap handset, yet it feels, you know, very well built. You know, the build quality on this is great. It feels like, you know, you could actually drop in a bit. And the button that you refer to is actually what you take off to get at the sort of SIM card and the micro SD card slot. I think HTC call this colour dipped, which is a rather nice way of putting it. And it's kind of like, you know, you've taken a phone and dipped it in a pot of paint. You've just got a slightly different colour at the bottom. And I actually think it's really quite eye-catching and effective. And it comes in various different colours. I mean, Nokia isn't the first to do coloured phones, but I think it was the first to really push having a whole range of them. And we've seen quite a few follow suit, not least of all HTC. But to be fair to HTC, they've done some pretty interesting colours in the past. And there's, you know, various other colours available, including a rather violet yellow version and blue. I've actually seen the orange one, and that was probably my favourite kind of orange, and then a lighter orange at the bottom. You know, the rest of the hardware specs are unspectacular. I mean, it's effectively the lower cost version or the lower spec version of Windows Phone 8. Think about it as a Tango version of Windows Phone 8, yet without any of the compromises of a Tango. So, you know, yes, it's a gigahertz processor, dual core still, and yes, it's 512 megabytes of RAM rather than a gigabyte. But at least in those spec pumps, that doesn't make a difference to the phone. It does run ever so slightly slower than the main Windows Phone 8 handsets. And yes, you know, there are, I think, two games maybe that you can't play on it that you can play on one with a gigabyte of RAM. But, you know, bravo to sort of Microsoft for actually having this kind of lower cost version, the lower spec version, without really making any compromise. And, you know, it works like any other Windows Phone 8 handset, you know, different live tile sizes, you know, running the common core with Windows 8 and all of that. And I think in a really striking package, and for the cost, you know, you will get this for £200 or less if you buy it SIM-free. You'll probably find it for less on pay as you go. So, okay, you know, really competitively priced. But yes, there now, is Rafe, one big caveat, isn't there?
There is, yes. So, mentally flip open your head, take off the jumper switch that says, always say nice things, and yes, put it on the, you know, let's be brutal about this, and I'll introduce it, and then you can join in with the rant. Because, ladies and gentlemen, Rafe is about to rant, I feel. See, HTC, let's start this. HTC have added an extra application into their bundle. You know, they have the HTC clock, and they have all of that. They have an application called Make More Space.
Not a good sign.
The new unique to this phone application is a phone that allows you to delete stuff. And the reason you have to do that is it ships with 4 gigabytes of internal storage only. Now, we've talked about this 4 gigabyte problem before on Windows Phone 7, the Samsung Omni M Swing Semi. And you know what? That leaves about 2.3, 2.4 gigabytes free of user accessible memory. And that's enough to get by for medium to light user on Windows Phone. Windows Phone 8, though, needs more room, has more capability. Out of the box, you have 1.1 gig of storage free on the internal. Now, once you download a couple of games, which have to go on the internal drive, you can't put them on the micro SD. Once those, you know, if there's like a pod catching application, the data has to be stored on the internal drive. If you want to download mapping data, it has to go on the internal drive. If you know, all the cache files that are taken from Internet Explorer, they all have to go on the internal drive. Within 2 days of using this handset with 3 or 4 applications, you know, Facebook, Twitter, a game, and some light fluffy website reading application, and you download a map because I do a bit of traveling. It's much better to have that on. 450 megabytes of free space on this handset and 48 hours.
Yeah.
It's great having an SD card to put your music on and to store your music and pictures on, but even if I put a 64 gig card in there, it's not accessible from the core operating system. It's, you know, Amazon Kindle books, what's that? They're 100 to 200
kilobytes.
Okay, right, ignore that, unless they've got lots of images on. But the point is, it doesn't have enough room to do anything. Yeah. It's crippled. It is HT. I just want to know who in HT has taken this out and used it for a week and went, you know what? Not only can I live with this, I can live with this for a 2-year contract.
Now, the thing is about all of this, I wouldn't have a problem if it was the lowest end HTC device and there was something else in the middle and then the 8X. But this is
I see where you're going from.
This is the second 8S handset. Well, if people were using it basically as a feature phone and just installing a handful of applications, it would be a problem. But of course, you know, that isn't typical. And with all that, I do keep in mind that some people will use it like that. And in that case, fine. You know, you can use this phone. But Ewan's right. I think in this
careful
case...
Careful now, we're recording this.
I know. Yeah, you'll be able to save that up for future use. It's just a cut too far. And so, for example, you had mentioned maps briefly there. I think the offline maps is one of the really useful functions you get in Windows Phone 8. And it is kind of, you know, it is available elsewhere, sort of. But, you know, that uses up quite a bit of space if you're in a reasonable sized country. And that's the sort of thing you want to be able to do. And as Ewan says, you know, you then have a couple of games installed. That space disappears very quickly. And actually, you need probably 100 or so megabytes free, at least just for kind of daily operation. And so I think there are a lot of people who will, you know, pick up this handset, who will start using it and will suddenly find out it runs out of room and they will end up with performance issues or something will go wrong and it will cause real hassle. So while I do acknowledge there is kind of a space for this, you know, a feature phone, Windows phone, and a lot of people call Windows phone that anyway, which I think is very unfair. It depends on your smartphone definition. But what I mean by using it as a feature phone, you know, using it as it comes out of the box with just a handful of applications. I think particularly in the enterprise space, you know, we've actually seen something like the Nokia 610 sort of occupy that role quite effectively. But, you know, we talked about Tango and some of the app compatibility issues there. You know, this is, in one sense, the same sort of thing, but it's even more acute because it's not about app compatibility. You said it right. The hardware just isn't really supporting the full Windows Phone 8 experience. And I think that's a real shame.
Mm-hmm. And it isn't supporting it now. In 2 years' time, this phone is going to be a disaster. HTC are not in the best place at the moment. They did not have a good financial year in 2012. Their projections are pointing down the way. They need success. They need solid hits. They don't need anything damaging their reputation. Rafe, the HTC 8S is going to be HTC's Nokia 9500 moment. The phone that was released with what Nokia decided was enough RAM that lots of us, when we were reviewing it, kind of went, yeah, you can live with it. But then as time went on, you realized you couldn't live with it. And that damaged part of Nokia's brand in that whole 2010 period leading up to all the kerfuffle and everything.
I think you're talking the N97 there rather than 9500.
Yes. You see, I've just kind of blanked the 97 from my head because the 9500 is actually not even 60 years old. But it amazes me that HTC let this out the door with 4 gig.
I wouldn't go quite that far because, as I say, I do see that there is, you know, a market for this sort of phone for people who aren't going to install a great number of apps because, you know, the rest of them are going to be buying the 8X or something else. Are consumers that savvy making that decision? No, probably not. And yes,
if
it was me,
even an SD card in the box, once you put 4 albums onto this, you're 300 meg down again.
Yeah, no, well, that's a separate issue around micro SD and marketing and how you sell all of that. But yes, if it had been me, I would have made this an 8 gigabyte handset. And yes, it probably would have added, you know, maybe $5, probably less than that to the bill of materials, you know, how much the phone costs. Because otherwise, it's a really elegant device. You know, the design is nice. Yeah, you know, like all of these sort of slightly lower cost devices, there are compromises. The camera's not very good at all, really. The sound isn't great. I mean, it does have the Beats mark on the back of it. We talked about that being pretty pointless
in
the past.
It's a bass boost.
Yeah, thank you. but otherwise, you know, if they were selling this for more money and just selling it as a small screen device, which is something of another mm-hmm. bugbear topic of ours, would love. Yeah. I actually think it would be quite popular.
Yep. I think this with 8 gig would have been the device that I would seriously have considered as my day-to-day device. But at the moment, it's the Nokia 820 that's running on that one. HTC, try again, please. Well, hopefully, they'll get the chance to. Right, let's finish up with the, which we've already showed, the Nokia Lumia 620. It's a budget device. It's a smaller screen. It's got the smaller processor. It's got interchangeable colors, so you can do it a little bit fashion a bit. And Brave, does it have 4 gig or 8 gig on it?
It has 8 gig on it.
And is it usable?
It is.
Defense rests.
Yes, and that's the big difference, really, between these two devices. I mean, I think Nokia have done a really fantastic job on design as well. It's kind of the more traditional Nokia style, i.e. a big plastic case that sort of pops out and it's an Express-on cover.
It's like the 5800.
It is. It's actually considerably slimmer than that, and it's obviously slightly wider. So, you know, it's got a curved back to it, so it fits really comfortably into the hand. And the smaller screen, again, it's the kind of the one-handed use thing that we talk about quite a lot. So, in some ways, I think this is Nokia's best Windows Phone 8 device in the context of, you know, its price and positioning. They've done a really clever bits of design touches. One of the things that's been talked about is these dual-shot cases, and actually essentially what it is one layer of plastic overlaid by another translucent layer. And there are sort of the ordinary cases, just one colour, and they're attractive enough. But the kind of the dual shot where they've got one colour underneath, which is in the case of this sort of lime green one, it's yellow, and then they've got a translucent green layer over the top. And it looks really quite distinctive from the front, because you get kind of two layers, and then on the back you get the kind of, this nice effect. And some of them are matte, some of them are gloss finish. But I think more of the point is, it's ergonomically, it fits nicely into the hand. Actually, if you take the back cover off, they've done a clever thing with that you built the audio jack into the case itself. So that means it can actually be on more of a curve, because often when you put the audio jack on a kind of a curve, it makes it a big problematic with some headphones, they won't fit in. But because they've actually built in, it's actually kind of set at an angle so that you won't get that similar kind of problem, which you do otherwise. The specifications otherwise are pretty similar to the HTC device, with the exception of that 8 gigabytes of internal storage. So again, it's kind of the lower spec version of Windows Phone 8. Pricing, again, fairly similar. I mean, it's probably slightly less, actually. In the UK, for example, you can pick up this handset on O2 for £150. That's around $200 or €200.
And that's on pay-as-you-go.
That's on pay-as-you-go. Which is absolutely fantastic value as far as I'm concerned. I would say this is one of the best mid-tier smartphones. And that's because the nature of Windows Phone 8 is that you get a very similar experience regardless of which handset you're on. Now, of course, there are some cuts to this, and the camera is one of them. The screen is another of them. It's not only a lower resolution screen, it's also things that actually cover the screen. It's not Gorilla Glass. I think it's a plastic. I'd have to look at that more closely. It does attract fingerprints a little bit more, and obviously the screen size itself is a bit smaller. But when you consider you can basically buy three of these for the same cost as a 920, it starts changing the equation value. So for a lot of people, I think this will be a great experience of a Windows Phone handset, and I think it sort of puts across the point that I've been talking about for a while, that Windows Phone degrades far better than Android does when you go towards these mid-tier and low-tier handsets. Android's success in the last year, has a lot of it has not been about the high-end handsets. Of course, they've sold plenty of those, but it's actually been the mid-tier handsets that have sold off the back of the heroes like the Samsung Galaxy S3. But it's the rest of the Galaxy range that has provided a lot of the shipment numbers. And I think the 620 could do the same for Nokia. And it's interesting, when I first saw this, I immediately thought kind of youth phone because of the Express-on covers. But of course, you can change kind of the look and feel of the phone with these covers. So, by default, a lot of them will be just coming black, which makes it look like a fairly serious business phone. But then you can, you know, change things up by putting these bright covers on. I've got a bunch of them sitting on the desk. This rather attractive lime green one. There's blue, there's white, there's yellow, there's red, there's orange.
How come you get all the cases? I've been dropping subtle hints to Nokia about having a look at some Nokia 820 shells to replace the white one. And you've got buckets of them for the 620 down there.
Well, when I got this handset, they sent me a few of the shells, which I think probably indicates to you how proud they are of that particular feature. You know, they want to try it out. And, you know, I've come across that problem. When you're reviewing handsets, you know, people go, oh, what's your favourite colour? Well, I've actually only seen a couple of them. In this case, I can say I do like the dual shot ones, which are actually the gloss finish, whereas the kind of more conservative ones, if you like, are the matte finish, which are the single colours. In fact, what they are is a white inside or white inner plastic and then a translucent coloured plastic on the outside. And they still look pretty effective, actually.
You always did strike me as a conservative kind of guy, Rafe.
Yeah, well, in this instance, I'm going for the more fun one. But the point I'm trying to make is that actually it has a pretty broad appeal, this handset, and I think the pricing is incredibly attractive. You know, it's also typically for Nokia, you know, the actual design is very robust. You know, it feels good in the hand, very solid. Despite being a removable cover, there's no sort of untoward squeaks or sort of unnecessary flexing. I mean, they've done a super job kind of putting this handset together. And I think this will be one of those ones that's a bit of a quiet hit. Okay, it's not as exciting as the 920 or even the 820, but this one should do really well. And if you're looking for the low-cost Windows Phone handset, this is now the one to buy. Now, you will find things like the 610, the 800, 900 available for a little bit longer and possibly cheaper than this. It's starting to be phased out in the UK. The 620 is going to kind of replace this. But even if you have a choice between a £99 800 or £150 620, go for the 620 because it's running Windows Phone 8, so you'll get an upgraded experience in terms of software, you know, probably later this year. You get a better set of features now, and you know, it's really nicely put together. I mean, yes, you know, there are compromises in terms of some of the internal components. I suspect, you know, things like maybe the digital signal processing chip or some other aspect of it, microphones, loudspeakers, etc., you know, being, you know, cut back a bit to get to that price point. But actually, it's pretty hard to see them when you come across it. I mean, as I said, I've talked about the screen, the camera. One thing I do want to mention is the loudspeaker. Now, this is, like a lot of the sort of cheap phones, it is set into the back, so you do get a bit of quietness when you set it down on the desk, but it is one of the loudest phones I've heard in quite some time. It kind of reminds me in a way of the Nokia 5800, which was another loud handset. It's louder than the 920, and I would probably classify this on the loudspeaker as the, you know, loudest Windows Phone device I've tried. Now, if that's important to you, that would be an important consideration. But, I mean, it's something that Nokia's done quite a lot in this price point. I don't know what it is about this kind of mid-tier price point of Nokia putting loud speakers in, but certainly well worth a look if you're kind of using that functionality a lot. But let's say, I've definitely got, you know, a soft spot for this. And looking at some of the other reviews around the web, it's quite clear that other people feel that this is a, you know, Nokia really producing a very, very good handset.
Okay, you know, you do all that justification of why you should get the 620 over the 800 or any of the Windows Phone 7 devices, Rafe. I can sum it up in 6 words.
Go on, then.
This has Angry Birds Star Wars.
Well, so does the older ones now.
No, not on Windows Phone 7.
I think they
Windows
now.
Phone 8. I've just checked up the Windows Phone store. It says works with Windows Phone 8 only.
Ah, but you have to look at the version that's specific to 7.5. He says... Let's see. Live on the podcast.
Who's right? Right for you and well, this isn't going to be that difficult to work out, really, is it? Well, let's see if I call up my Lumia 800 and see if it'll let me do that.
Windows Phone 7.5.
There's no reason. Stay with the 800. The 620 is just orange.
Well, the 800, I will give you, is kind of still the more elegant overall design and because it costs more. But the 620...
It's available in orange. It's available in orange. That's all I got left, folks. It's all I got left. Let's run the podcast out before. Well, Rafe did say I was right early in the podcast. Now I'm back in my place. So let's choose an application of the week. Rafe, have you got one or shall I go first?
Yes, I have. I thought I'd choose a game this week. It's going
to
be
really. I mean, what's happened to the careful and timid and not always conservative Rafe? What have you done with him?
Well, I can't afford to have my reputation come too stuck in the mud.
Did somebody put flowers in your hair in San Francisco?
No, they didn't. But I did play Super Monkey Ball 2 on the plane. This game, it's one of those games that really suits you to a smartphone because it's using the sensors, the accelerometer and the G sensor. You know, as you tilt the phone, you're actually rolling a monkey in a ball, hence the name, around various levels or mazes to collect coins. And you have to do it within a certain time limit. I think a lot of people will be familiar with this. It's been available on the console, various phones and other mobile gaming devices, you know, for a long time. But as I say, do you think it's particularly well suited to smartphone, kind of the snack style of play together with the sensors, kind of add up to a better experience than you get on a console game, or this version of the game, I should say. It also just, it worked nicely for me on Windows Phone. I enjoyed playing this one for a few hours. So if you like that style of, you know, puzzle game, cross with, you know, desperately tilting the phone and tilting your head at the same time, obviously, to get that extra bit of tilt, it works very well. So it's available in the Windows Phone marketplace and definitely a recommended download from me.
Okay, and the one from me is an update, actually. We've mentioned it a couple of times. Infinite Flight, which is a flight simulator available from Flying Dev Studios. A relatively big update on Windows Phone, a bigger update on the iOS version, and I think that is significantly outselling the Windows Phone version, but it's great to see that they're still following the old platform. The changes that we've got in the Windows Phone version, mostly it's around flight models. There's been another region added, Charlotte in North Carolina has been added as near, so you've got more airports to fly around and land at. And there's better taxiway markings. But they've improved the flight models in two aircraft, the Cessna 172 and the Spitfire Mark 8, which is the one I've been quite happily throwing around the sky. And they've actually now made it feel more like a proper Spitfire. I've been always wondering why I had to keep it above 100 knots in the approach to stop it stalling, and I could idle the engine in. And all the manuals that I've read about the Spitfire, that's not how you land one of those things. You need to have about half throttle. You need to bring it in at about 95. Now you can do that. And you can also do a proper three-point landing. That's where the two main wheels and the tail wheel hit the runway at the exact same time. You can do the sort of what's called the rotation as you come into landing and make a much smoother three-point landing. It actually now feels more genuine in the landing phase of the game. And again, we always talk about, you know, where games have sort of levels that you can play quickly. Part of me just loves the fact that I can jump in, take off from an airport, go to one that's maybe just about 5 miles to the west, do the approach, bring it in again, and that takes about 5 or 10 minutes, which is a perfect sort of snack size thing. And I'm slowly working my way up the west coast of America, runway by runway, in a little beat-up World War II fighter aircraft.
Okay, so for those of us that didn't understand all of that, what you need to know is it's even more accurate.
It flies a bit better, yeah.
Yeah, it's even more accurate than it was before, but really is a fantastic flight simulator and kind of one of those games that you just sort of can't help but be impressed by. I think for the more casual gameplay, maybe you want to stick to Super Monkey Ball 2, but if you're into flight simulators, Infinite Flight is an essential download.
Indeed, yeah. So those applications, links to what we talked about in the podcast, we're going to be back on the website with those. But for now, thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Great to have your company. Rafe, great to have your company as well.
Thank you, Ewan, and thanks everyone for listening.
And we shall catch you in the next week or so. Ta-ra for now.